Welcome to another episode of One For You, the movie podcast that inadvertently gave you all a view behind the curtain by accidentally uploading the unedited version of the last episode. So now you know how the sausage is made, friends, and it isn't pretty. If you're still with us, nonetheless, you are brave souls. And so are we, because we braved not one, but two horror, or at least horror-adjacent films for this episode. The new release is Us, and the gem is...
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I'm Olivia Cionameo.
I'm André Erdin.
So, André, last week we lamented that there wasn't anything interesting coming out, but I very much doubt you didn't watch any films at all. Is that correct?
Yes, there was, surprisingly enough, there was something new on Netflix.
What?
Okay. Yeah, a new Netflix documentary. It's called Behind the Curve, and it's about flat earthers, so people who believe that the earth is indeed flat and not a globe. It was a quite entertaining watch because... One goes from ridicule to worry very quickly when you realize that what these people think about authority and how they distrust authority and everything. So for me, it was a very entertaining watch, but I thought the filmmaking was a bit average. Also, it had a very unclear stance. At one point, it tries to engage with them. But on the other hand, it also kind of ridicules them. So I wasn't so sure about the filmmaking, but the subject itself is very interesting.
So do you now also believe that the earth is in fact flat?
I'm doubting my education, yes.
You're doubting your education, okay. Well, I didn't go with a new release, but went with an old one that I haven't seen yet. I think it came out in 2011. It's A Dangerous Method by David Cronenberg. And that's the story of C.G. Jung and and Freud and Sabrina Spielrein. So three very important people in the history of psychoanalysis. And basically, it's about... how there became a split between Freud and Jung because Jung wanted to go in a different direction. And the interesting part is, of course, that this all happened, or that, you know, Jung was based in Zurich, so not the city, but in the canton of Zurich, and also worked at the Burghölzli, which was the clinic, still exists. And yeah, I thought it was like, it was a very, a film that followed the narrative of psychoanalysis, where you have the father figure that needs to, you know, that you want to symbolically kill, and you have sex at the issue of everything. So I think Freud would have been like, yeah, sure. Okay, let's move on to our new release, which is Us, the new film by Jordan Peele, who also wrote it, and it's about the Wilson family that goes on holiday at a place that brings back bad memories for the mother, Adelaide, played by Lupita Nyong'o, because she had a very scary experience there as a child. And it soon becomes clear that something bad is indeed afoot when a family of doppelgangers shows up. Yeah, and then it goes from there.
Yeah, it's quite... So Jordan Peele, who did Get Out, sticks to his horror. And I think in this film, we talked about this before, it's as psychological, but more gore than Get Out.
I think there it's more, it almost goes in the direction of a slasher film,
yes.
I think. Yes. Yeah. Not in a bad way, you know.
No.
I think that's interesting. And you pointed out that while there is gore, you don't focus on it so much.
Yeah, it doesn't dwell on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I thought it was a quite interesting story, especially there is... Jordan Peele has a very nice way of building tension. There's always tension, and his foreshadowing is off the hook. There is so much doubles and so much mirroring everywhere. And if you've seen the trailer, you kind of know what to expect from the film. So it was really nice to really see all the little Easter eggs he put in there at the beginning before the doppelganger family shows up.
Yeah, I think there's one shot that particularly stayed with me is when they're on the beach and they're walking in a line. So you see them from above, you see them walking in a line, and then you see their shadows, you know, on the sand. And it was like perfect. I was like, yes, I see what you're doing, sir. That was very nice.
Okay, I didn't notice that. For me, it was more there's so many mirrors and reflections on glass.
Mm-hmm.
There's at one point, there's a toy spider and a little spider that creeps underneath underneath it. At some points, it was a bit too much, but then again, I didn't notice the shadows.
Yeah, so I think that it's very well made here. And I think, you know, Jordan Peele, I think maybe sticks with the horror genre because on the one hand, it's entertaining. And in, on the other hand, you can always make a point, right? So it's about something. So I think, you know, in Get Out, it was about, you know, race relations in the US. And I think in Us, it's more about, you know, maybe the dark side of America. I don't know. Because you obviously can read the title as Us, but you can also read it as US. So
there's an allegory at play.
Yes.
Even though I'm not exactly sure what it is about. I have to think about that some more.
Yeah.
But what I liked is that he moved away from Get Out problematizing race relations in the US. And now it is about the nation as a whole. And he to a certain extent, normalizes African Americans in horror films, because horror is still up to today a very white genre, and I think Jordan brings a different voice to the table, and I really enjoyed that. It's also about the relations between the Wilsons and another family, that they to a certain extent compete, or at least the fathers. There's this thing with the boat.
Who has the bigger boat?
Who has the bigger boat? Mm-hmm. Who has a bigger house? And I think the Winston father, who is played by Winston Duke, who was also in Black Panther, played in Baku.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes. mentions, oh, now he had to buy a bigger boat to outdo me once more. So there's this tension in the background always, but I think it doesn't really play into the plot that much.
Mm-hmm. That is, I would say that's true.
It's very, it almost feels like it was a good portion of that plot was cut out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one issue I had in the first act, because they meet on the beach with this other family, the befriended family, and there it feels very choppy. And I'm not sure if there was a different plot to the film as a whole, but then it goes very directly into the doppelgangers. And that's where it gets interesting, but something seems to be left out at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I'm sorry, it's just, you have always have to compare it to Get Out, but, you know, it's like a little bit, I think a little bit less focused. In Get Out, you had everything, you know, was pointing towards this one thing, this one theme. And I think here, maybe because the theme is a bit bigger and broader, because, you know, what is the nation? What is a nation? Maybe, you know, it's a little bit more... it's less tight, I would say, in some ways.
And it, not to take anything away, but I think at the end I was a bit left wondering what this was all about.
Yeah.
And maybe I just didn't see it now, but to be honest, I thought it was just a bit unfocused, like you said.
Yeah. I think maybe this is a film that benefits, you know, from rewatching it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if you were to do an analysis for, you know, university or something, I think you can get a lot out of it. And it is an entertaining film. And I think, for instance, the acting is really good. Like Lupita Nyong'o is very good, very scary as the doppelganger.
And it's really cool because she has two very contrasting characters to play. Because the family, the doppelganger family that comes to the house, it acts very different, just just from a physical standpoint.
Yeah,
they creep on the floor. They don't really talk. They just use noises to communicate. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, I think, a very uncanny. I mean, a double gang motif is very uncanny, and I think Jordan Peele does that very deliberately. And I think the uncanniness also plays into it more because there's something that returns from the past. As we said, there's bad memories that return, and something that was perhaps repressed in the past now comes back to the front, and they have to confront that in some way or another. One aspect that I really liked was the symbolism. There's, as they say, there's so many coincidences lining up.
Yeah.
And some of them are like numbers, like 11-11. that returns again and again. For they talk about Jeremiah 11:11.
Yeah, it's like a passage from the Bible. I mean, it's something about. I mean, I can quote. I looked it up because I was like, this is significant, but yes. I am not up on my Bible study, so I didn't know what it meant. But it's if you go to the King James Bible, it says, "Therefore, thus saith the Lord: Behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape, and though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them." So clearly it's not going to end well for anyone.
No, there's some pending doom and almost Armageddon-like.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking in terms of symbolism, I mean, the doppelgangers wear like these red overalls mm-hmm. that reminded me of prison overalls in yes. a way. So there's that. And then at some point, Adelaide, so that's Lupita Nyong'o's character, she has her hands shackled, and that sort of reminded me, you know, the yeah. shackles of slavery, maybe a little bit there. So I think
also the first title card points out that there is a tunnel system underneath America, and that also the Underground Railroad.
Yeah, I was actually also thinking of that.
And I think it's a play on that, definitely. Mm-hmm. And there's so much symbolism. I also like the props. For example, the scissors. I think you can do so much with the scissors. Mm-hmm. At one hand, there's a lot of...
creepy.
Yeah, the it's scissors, really creepy.
Like the sound of the scissors,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like...
There's a lot of rabbits. And mm-hmm. on the one hand, the scissors somewhat resemble the ears of the rabbits.
True.
Then it's also... scissors are always made of two parts that is linked in the middle. So there's also this sense of something is linked.
Mm-hmm.
That is... or the whole is made up of two things. But then it's also... the scissors are used lots to... not to to split things, but to cut.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is something... I think there's... as you said, maybe a second watch will clarify certain things.
Yeah, but I mean, evidently there is a lot to analyze in this
film. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was certainly an interesting watch, and always he keeps you on your toes.
It's true. Yeah. And it was, but I have to say, it was a little less scary than I mm-hmm. expected it, because when I first watched the trailer, I had to stop in the middle of the trailer because I was like, oh, I'm freaked out. I can't watch this. And then I went actually on my own to the cinema, and it was okay. I mean, I'm not a big fan of horror films because I am a scaredy cat, but this was okay for me. So
yeah, my experience was very similar. I expected to be way more scared,
mm-hmm.
but I think it also had to do with the audience, because the audience overreacted to so many things that
really?
That I was less scared somehow.
Okay,
don't know. Yeah,
and I mean, there are moments I think to break the tension. They're a bit funny. I think that's especially Winston Duke's job to break up the tension. And there's excellent use of music, I think, you know, from ones like in a terrible scene, suddenly "Fuck the Police" is playing and stuff. So I think that's, there's some good.
Jordan Peele, I think it comes out of his sketch comedy, that he's very well versed in comedy and uses these contrapuntual moments,
mm-hmm.
like as you said, use of music or use of jokes that are really inappropriate in that moment but break the tension somewhat. And I think that makes the creepy moments even more creepy.
Yeah. Okay, so I would say that is one for us, right?
Yeah, I will definitely rewatch it.
Yeah, just to know what it all means.
Yes.
Okay, then let's move on to the gem session, where we're going to discuss in all, you know, plot-specific detail, so spoilers abound, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yes, it's a 2014 production, directed and written by Anna Lily Amirpour. It's original, it's in Farsi, but it's an American production. So it's shot in America, but all the actors are Iranian, I think. And it's a story of Arash, who lives in this small industrial town. He is mainly defied for his car, for which he has worked a long, long time, as he points out at the beginning, to a small boy. And by his relation to his father, who is usually staying at home, and he's a drug addict. One night, the dealer of the father shows up and wants some money and takes Arash's car. And in the following night, he actually goes then to the drug dealer's home and demands his car back. But there is an intruder. There is a girl there who the drug dealer has taken home with some promise for, we don't know really, but turns out she's a vampire and kills him. I think we can say that. Yeah. No, we're talking about spoilers anyway. Yeah. Fine. So this is the main spoiler. But I think if you know the marketing and know the trailer, then it's fairly clear from the beginning that this is a vampire film, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much the beginning. The rest of the film then is about how Arash and the girl meet and how she preys on different figures in the town.
Yeah, always on men.
Oh, not always. There's also this prostitute.
Yeah, but she doesn't prey on her. She protects her.
That is true. Yes. Yeah, very true. She preys on the men and always reminds them to be good boys.
It's true. Because I think it's like a reversal of the trope. If you have a girl who walks home alone at night, usually she will be the one to die, you know, right? And but she's the predator in this one.
It very much evokes an image of somebody being preyed on, mm-hmm. but I think the reversal works very well in that instance. And those were my favorite scenes when the director subverts expectations in that way. Also, how she is dressed. She wears a headscarf or a chador, which is not only a headscarf, but also a full body cloak.
Yeah, but it's like open in the front in her case. And it also, I think it's a mixture between, you know, this traditional thing, but it also reminded me of the Dracula cape, you know,
where she's like, woo! And there's a juxtaposition of actually the Dracula costume that Arash wears for Halloween and then mm-hmm. meets her on the street and he says, "Hello, I'm Dracula." And she's like, "Uh-huh, I see." I think the costume is very interesting because it works as a cape. And at a certain point, it reminded me of Batman. And the town is also called Bat Town.
Yeah, so Bat City. Yeah, it's
Bat
like...
Bat City or Bat City. Yeah. So it's almost Bat Town, but yeah.
Yeah, and the city is so, like you said, it's like this industrial town, and you see a lot of, like for gaining oil, you know, these huge, I don't even know what they're called, you know, they go up and down and
oil machines
that get the oil out of the ground, and it's just very industrial, but then you also have, I think there's a ditch where dead people are lying in there and nobody reacts to that, right?
That was a really interesting part because I only noticed because that the bridge and the riverbank where the bodies lie is shown several times. Mm-hmm. And at first I didn't even realize, but only when Arash kind of dumps the body of the drug dealer in there, you realize, there's more.
Yeah, there are all these bodies and everyone's just like, yeah, sure.
And then it also made sense why the town is so empty all of a sudden. There is only a handful of characters. There's only about 6 or 7 characters.
That we see. That's true.
And you don't really see, streets are empty, buildings are empty. There's a party scenes where there's a lot of people, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of young people dancing and partying. But mainly on the street and at home... There is nobody.
It's true. It's very empty, again
a very uncanny absence. Yeah, of
that is true.
Something.
I think it helps maybe with the because it's a very stylized film. It's like shot in black and white, and like say all these empty streets. So it evokes this uncanny nothingness there. But it's also shot. Or not shot, but like the mise-en-scène is reminiscent of like a 50s. US mm-hmm. Hollywood film, like Arash looks like he's James Dean somehow.
he really tries to.
Right? So it's like you have this mixture of Iranian culture and American culture mm-hmm. that's somehow brought together here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with pre-revolution Iran and post-revolution Iran. Before the revolution, it was very secular country, but there's also a lot of pop music and there's a lot of Farsi pop music. The beginning is very reminiscent of a Tom Waits song. And then it also reminded me of Jim Jarmusch because Jim Jarmusch's early work, also black and white, mm-hmm. always Tom Waits soundtrack. And I think it negotiates between the modern, more traditional and religious, which is also personified by this girl who wears the headscarf, and the more secular past, which is personified by Arash, perhaps, with his James Dean's look. And the 50s is very much that time.
Yeah. And I also think it's like, it sort of has a feminist message, like what mm-hmm. we already pointed out, you know, that she is the predator and so forth, and that she protects the prostitute, who's called Ati. So she helps her out. I mean, I think she destroys the men who prey on Ati. On the one hand, the drug dealer, on the other hand, Arash is dead. And I think, you know, the moment where she kills the drug dealer, it's like there's a lot of Ersatzhandlungen in this film, you know. Mm-hmm. So she sort of, she bites off his finger and it's like she's castrating him, right? Yeah. So there's that's on the one hand. And there's another moment when she's hanging out with Arash and then he wants to give her some earrings that he's stolen, but she can't use them because her ears aren't pierced. So he pierces them for her. So, you know, also symbolic in there. So I think that's really nicely done.
Yeah.
But what I think is it's a little bit scattershot in terms of plot. I mean, like, everyone is somehow related to everyone else and their plotline, but it's not very tightly, you know, told.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I generally wanted to like it more,
but
I think it really lacks in plot. There's a good central idea. This is good central image. I think visually it gives a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think the black and white adds something to that. It makes it, as I said, reminiscent of films of Jim Jarmusch, who operate very in the same sense. This empty town, there's nothing to do.
Yeah,
and there's somebody preying on somebody else.
And it's also not just absence of people, but I think there wasn't that much dialogue either, right?
Yeah.
And I don't
especially
know.
The girl doesn't talk that
yeah,
much.
Yeah, she doesn't talk that much. At first I thought maybe she wasn't going to talk at all, but then she did. I don't know, maybe because I saw the dubbed version. I saw the German version, but I felt very stilted. But that might be the dubbing. I don't know. You saw the original, right? I mean, I know you don't speak Farsi, but...
No, I don't. I didn't notice it, but maybe on a second watch.
Maybe it is.
I think it was very purposefully stilted, if it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because they rarely talk. There's a lot of exchanges of looks.
Yeah.
And when they talk, it's very loaded.
Yeah.
They want to say so much more than they actually say. And
Yeah, I feel it's a little bit like style over substance.
Mm-hmm, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think it's her first or second film. I'm really interested to see what she does next.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as I said, I wanted to like it more. I think it might have worked better as a short film.
Mm-hmm.
It's just under 100 minutes, which is still fairly short for today's standard. But at the same time, it was a bit too long.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, so I guess that's maybe one for us with reservations.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, but in the meantime, we're also going to be watching films. Is there anything you're looking forward to, Andre?
Yes, there's a new documentary called RBG about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is a U.S. Supreme Court justice, and it's about her life and what she does, and what stance she takes among the U.S. Supreme Justices. And I think it's very much about her life, but also what she has achieved with her career and where she is going now, because she is held as one of the more liberal Supreme Justices. And I think especially in today's time and in the political context of America, that's quite important. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. I am looking forward to Dumbo, which is coming out next week here in Switzerland. It's a live action remake of the Disney classic. It's directed by Tim Burton. And, you know, I mean, I think the original is a very short film. I have never seen it, I have to say, so I am also not super protective of it. And I think, you know, it could be a cool story. And even if Tom Burton sometimes, you know, is rather a miss than a hit, I think, you know, he's always interesting in terms of visuals and everything. So I think that could be something cool. And that was it for this episode of the One For You podcast. A little teaser for next time. The current release that we're going to be discussing is Destroyer with Nicole Kidman. And to get in contact with us and maybe even suggest a gem, find us on Twitter where we're at OneForYouPod or write us an email at OneForYouPod@gmail.com. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.